This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte.
Today's word on the future, together. Because the future of business isn't driven by what machines or people do alone, but by all they can achieve together. See how we can help at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Now, one of the amazing people I work with at The New Yorker is a guy named Henry Finder. He's an editor at the magazine, and he's got to be about the best read person I've ever met or you've ever met. He reads everything, and he's interested in all of it. Still, I have to admit, I was surprised when Henry started talking about his enthusiasm for a series of comic books called Monstrous.
I think for a lot of readers, you know, wide-ranging readers, it's become hard not to take cognizance of comic books these days. It's just become an explosion of creativity. Monstrous comes out not long ago, and it created an amazing stir. Even though I would struggle to describe the world that it creates, it involves a tribe of witch scientists hunting magical half-human creatures. Our heroine is a young warrior who finds herself possessed by an ancient, possibly malevolent spirit. The story is rendered in a visual style that makes reference to Japanese manga, Aubrey Beardsley, Victorian architecture, the art of ancient China, and you just find yourself possessed by it. Monstrous is the work of the writer Marjorie Liu, who collaborated with the artist Sana Takeda. Liu is an old hand at comic writing. She spent years as one of the very few female writers working for Marvel Comics, where she wrote characters like the X-Men and Black Widow. But Monstrous is her first original story. She joined me to talk about it. Marjorie, I've just struggled to describe what Monstrous is about. How do you describe the book?
So Monstrous is sort of like Game of Thrones meets Miyazaki meets steampunk meets Godzilla. That's one way of putting it. It's basically about this girl who has survived this cataclysmic war, and she's trying to put herself back together again. She feels like that she has lost her humanity. She feels like a monster, and for good reason, because she has a literal monster inside of her. She doesn't know what it is, but it's beginning to take over her body and her mind.
Monstrous takes place in a world that's so specific and so completely unfamiliar. Why is this the first original story that you've decided to tell?
Well, I'd always had this vision in my head of a girl standing alone on a battlefield. And I think this feeling in my heart of the solitude of this person, you know, the loneliness of this person, the emptiness, came from a childhood listening to my grandmother talk about the war. My dad is Chinese, and he immigrated in the late 70s. My grandfather was a major general in the Chinese Air Force. My grandmother, on the other hand, when she was 14 years old, she had to leave her village because the Japanese troops were coming. And she ended up walking over 1,000 miles as part of this march of refugees. And the stories she would tell were just hair-raising. At the time, it didn't strike me as odd that she could tell these stories and laugh. As an adult, looking back on it, when I think about some of the things that she would share with us, you know, I marvel at the fact that she could still smile about it. And so when I was working on Monstrous, I was thinking, okay, here's this girl and she has survived this war. And she didn't survive it in a cute way. Like, she is really, like, has been psychically just ripped apart. How would a girl like that put herself together, regain her humanity in a way that would allow her 20, 30 years from now to be able to look back and tell her grandchildren some of what happened to her and laugh?
It's interesting that you've chosen such a fantastical setting for a story that's so deeply rooted in your life and your own family history.
What's interesting about that in hindsight is that when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, everything that I read, the protagonists were almost always white. And there was no mirror that I could hold up in front of me, you know, in which I could look into it and say, oh, I recognize that person. So if you had asked me 10 years ago, you know, what my books are about, I would have said, oh, I write about shapeshifters and psychics. But what I actually write about, the themes that have carried me through all these years, are those of people who have been othered. Mm-hmm. And in these books, these people who are othered are always looking for community and home and family and friendship and love.
So you're playing with fire in a way. This whole approach is itself sort of imbued with this long tradition, you know, the traditions of which the other is supernatural. So in a way, you're exploring what was Jesse Williams's line, we're magical, but we're real.
People of color, we're not always seen as quite human. I think about how Chinese or Asianness is often depicted in a sort of a heightened fantasy context where we are these mystical, you know, ninja shaman creatures that are imbued with like fantastic Asian powers. It's a fantasy of what Asia is. Now, what I'm doing is I'm not engaging in sort of the Orientalist tropes that we're accustomed to in the West. I'm writing like a fantasy novel, you know, a graphic novel that is set in Asia. And as someone who's actually aware of any possible tropes that are out there, it's my job to either avoid them or subvert them.
Now, the other striking thing about Monstrous is a sense of a matriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
People who seem to be ruling things are all women. There are men, but they're mainly subaltern. Our hero is a woman, of course.
Mm-hmm.
This is the inverse of the usual comic book formula.
Well, why not? I mean, the thing is, I always found the Smurfs really weird. Mm. You know, you think about the Smurfs, and there's one female Smurf, and there's like a whole village of male Smurfs. That's kind of weird.
Now that you mention.
Yeah. And I just think about a lot of the popular culture that I grew up with, whether it was film or television, you would see a bunch of dudes and there might be one woman. That's not real life. And I thought, okay, well, why not just reverse this without comment and write a story in which it's all women having adventures and being the ones in charge.
You know, I wonder if some of our listeners might be surprised to discover that you're taking on these ambitious ideas in the form of a comic. But then it strikes me, you've addressed similarly ambitious ideas in some of your other comic writing. Famously, you wrote the issue of Astonishing X-Men that featured the first gay marriage in the Marvel Universe. And at its heart, a series like the X-Men is really about prejudice and ultimately equality.
Yes, the X-Men embody this beautiful idea that inclusion isn't just a great thing. Inclusion is necessary to the survival of us all. It's interesting because even though that these are the themes that the X-Men have carried, we don't really necessarily see that playing out in the creators themselves who are writing the X-Men. It's a theme,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily a practice.
Anita Sarkeesian was on this show and mm-hmm. talked a bit about her experience with Gamergate. You've talked about representation, non-representation, but let's go further.
Mm-hmm.
An atmosphere of sexism, do we find that in the industry? Do we find it in Comic-Cons?
Yes, yes. Two double yeses to that. I'm working in an industry in which, at the two mainstream companies, DC and Marvel, there are very, 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 very few female creators. For years and years and years, I would have girls, young women coming up to me saying, I want to write comics. But everyone tells me that women can't write comics. And I'd be like, okay, well, that's just BS. That is an establishment trying to protect their privilege. But I have been told by top editors at Marvel that women cannot write superheroes.
Really?
Because women don't read about superheroes.
You know that's not true.
Clearly. Clearly, this is not true. Clearly. The medium is becoming a greater part of our pop culture experience. And because of that, I have a great deal of hope that the more that this is out there, the more we will attract diverse creators, diverse voices who will be knocking against the walls, knocking on the doors, and creating their own work.
There's a larger trend in terms of comics commenting on the world. You know, historically, if you think of comic books that weren't the kind of standard issue, kind of the more indie versions like Harvey Pekar or Robert Crumb, you know, you would get this sense. And then there was the turn toward weightier graphic novels like Joe Sacco's work.
I love Joe Sacco.
Or, of course, you know, the great Art Spiegelman's Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it feels that even more mainstream serialized comics are able to take on the big issues.
The beautiful thing about comics is that they are that intersection between prose and film, in which we can capture both the visual nature of film, but also the interiority of a novel. And the beautiful thing about that is that it allows both the eye and the mind to bear witness in tandem. And so you become immersed, you become surrounded by the story in ways that you might not necessarily be if you were just reading prose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this has become a medium in which people are coming into it and saying, wow, this is an opportunity for me to live in stories. You know, I can live in a novel, but living in a comic book, in a graphic novel, is a very, very different experience. And I think that it's one that people are waking up to. And for many, many years, comics were seen as childish and remedial. And that's changing. That is absolutely changing for the better.
Marjorie Liu, the author of the comic book series Monstrous. She spoke with Henry Finder, who's the editorial director of The New Yorker.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.